picture. Very thankfully, Joanne was willing to be our be waiting in the wings for us, and it works out really well because we were supposed to hear from Joanne back in March when we had the snow days for the blizzard and the electrical outage and all of that. So we get to hear.
Shut off your phones.
Yes, our phones on the checklist. Like if you had a phone.
Yeah.
Because when Elna was born, I had a cell phone, but I think it was just a flip phone.
Yeah.
I didn't have an iPhone until much later. Or smartphone. I don't even know if I had a flip phone. It might have just been a little Nokia. All right, well, so I'm pleased to welcome today Joanne Bluer. Joanne is a long-term member of TCC. She and her husband John have been married for 34 years and raised their two kids in Wayland. David is 31 and lives in North Carolina, and Elizabeth is 28 and lives in Washington, D.C. She and John now reside in Sudbury, where Joanne owns a small business, Curtains by Joanne. She was very involved with Mom to Mom in administration and speaking for almost two decades and loves coming back because she has a heart for moms, knowing the joys and trials of raising kids in an intentional and loving way. So we have a lot to learn. Thanks very much. Welcome, Joanne.
Thank you. Oh. This is the extra
question. I put some on the table. Actually, I painted some of these at home.
Okay.
So that's
the And do I need to do anything with this now?
Does she need to do anything?
It doesn't.
Let's see. Okay. Is it on?
It's
oh, wait.
On.
There we go.
Thank you. Without my reading glasses on.
If we need more of those, I'll pass those blue ones out.
Yep.
But I put out the ones already.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There's so few of us, I feel like I could just go and chat at every table and life would be good, you know. But instead, I'm going to talk to you about, it's a little bit the different stages of motherhood, but more importantly, the idea of balancing our lives in the midst of whatever it is that's going on in each of your lives, because many of you have teenagers, or some of you do. Some of you have tweeners. Some of you have elementary school, like Krista, with three elementary schoolers. And how many of you have babies? I think this is the baby table here, right? No? Where is the baby table? No? No babies. Oh, toddlers. Okay. Well, people think the baby. Yeah, right. People think the baby stage is tiring. I think the toddler stage is exhausting. So we will talk through that just a little bit. I'll take you back in time, the year 1987. This is the video I should be showing you right now, but when we moved 2 years ago, it got put in exactly the wrong spot. And I don't know what that spot is yet. So the year 87, the date February 14th, the event, a gift for John for Valentine's Day. David was 5 months old that February. And I had been home with him since birth. My great little guy, as pudgy, I would challenge any of you to have a bigger width size of leg than my David. You think so? I don't know, Amy. I don't know. And I want to put that winter in perspective. We had a lot of snow, far more than anything that I can remember in these years And one of the reasons I know it is because when we put out our Christmas tree in on January 1st, we dropped a bolt, and it was snowing. We dropped a bolt to the tree holder just outside the door, and we couldn't find it in the snow. And you know when we found it? We found it when the snow finally disappeared in the middle of April. And there was no opportunity to find it between that January 1st and mid-April. So it was one of those winters where the ice just built up, and we lived on a small neighborhood street, and there were a few intersecting streets. Taking a carriage on that was kind of treacherous because it was just really bumpy and icy. I couldn't put David in at least what we used to call snugglies or in a backpack because the footing just wasn't good. And so I was pretty isolated to the house. The house, or for those of you old enough or have been around long enough, the old Natick Mall. How many of you knew the old Filene's had a 2 or 3 story parking garage, which was perfect because I could go in there, didn't have to worry about snow, put David in the carriage, and walk around. Wasn't there an old Woolworths in there? I mean, this is ancient. There was something like that. I hate shopping with a passion, but it was a outing for us. I had to buy a dress for something, and we went to, oh my goodness, the Chestnut Hill Mall, and walked around there, you know. So those were, I'm laughing now because I still remember these events 31 years later. So there was no group or association like Mom to Mom. I didn't belong to a play group. My friends were all working. So it was an exhilarating and very isolating time in the dead of winter, compounded by the fact that John took his first international job that January, and he was gone for 1 or 2 weeks at a time. So I was not used to a husband traveling at all, and then all of a sudden, now that we have this little one, he bolts town. And so I made this video of a day in the life of David and Joanne to give as a gift for my husband for Valentine's Day, who was schlepping Europe at the time. And it was a cute video. I looked just the same. I got up. I was in my Lanza flannel nightgown. I'm sure I had brushed my hair. And I got the video going, and I set it up. So, and I walk into David's room. He's in bed, and I'm singing what I always sang to him in the morning. It's time to rise and shine and give God your glory, glory. And I get him out of bed, and he's happy that morning, which was great. And next thing you know, I'm taking a video of him going in his little bathtub and getting dressed. And halfway through getting him dressed, so he's 5 months old, he's starting to sit up a little bit. And so I kind of propped him in the corner, and I went, turned on the video, and I said, "Look, Dad, David's almost sitting up now." And right as I said that, he did this, and he whacked his head on the corner of the table, and it was a crack. Oh, my word. I went running to him. It's on the video. And I felt like such an idiot mother. And I didn't know how to edit it out. But so it's still there for posterity, but I think the next owners of the house are going to find it. So DSS, I think I've gotten past that. But then the video goes on. I mean, so we make mistakes as moms, and David lived through that, although maybe some of the hiccups he had growing up had to do with that. I don't know. I considered myself a resourceful, energetic, capable woman. I was home 24/7 with this little guy who I loved to death. But the fact that those lonely, boring days existed, and I didn't go back to work till David was 9 months old, and it was the dead of winter, and my mother always said, "Why did you go back to work when it was summertime?" I said, "I know, not that bright, you know." But my life had changed forever. Can anybody associate with this? Yeah. I mean, if, for those of you that have a chance to do the tongue-in-cheek stuff in the, on the purple sheet, I mean, there's a lot of truth behind those little items. I've always said, nobody can ever prepare you for motherhood. No matter how much reality, if you haven't been there, done that, and even with child one to child two, it can be really different, right? And, you know, when you read about depression, postpartum depression, all that, those can be real things. And so it's not that we don't love that little guy or that little gal, but we are human beings, and it can be very hard. And so today's focus is on our role and identity as, I put as a mom, but really as a woman. And mom is a huge piece of who that woman is. It still is at the ages of 31 and 28. And I always had a heart to give a talk like this because I really recognize in all of us the struggle. It is not an easy job to raise kids. And so often do you say, I'm not good enough, or I don't know how to. You don't have to raise your hand. You know, you can say, not only am I not good enough, I stink at this. I'm not cut out for this, is what I used to say to John some days. I am just not cut out for this. Like, what do you do now, you know? And but we are not alone, and that's what I love. Always loved about Mom to Mom is we find out that we are not alone. I think that's the number one response that we get when people fill out forms at the end of the season. And so I think there's a few things that influence our lives that as moms that are external to us. There's a lot of things that affect us internally, but and I'm going to talk about those today just so that you are aware of the pressures that come from outside of us that feed into some of our own insecurities as moms. And so I want to address that I'm not good enough kind of thing that we all, I'd be shocked if anybody has never felt that before. And if you feel it today, you know, I'd often say, if you have a good day, you think, I really got this down. And then the next day, you say, who was I thinking about? So, this set expectations have a lot to do with our own and ones that come from the outside. How can we balance that and be okay in our day-to-day living? As I look out, I see a bunch of beautiful, caring, capable moms, and I know that. I know that for all of you. And you're attractive on the outside, but the fact that you're here says you're very attractive on the inside, that your motivations for wanting to do well for your kids, for yourself, for your family, are very real. You come here Friday after Friday for decades, some of you. Is it close to a decade, Kathy?
Gosh, it's probably 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah, you're to Kathy. And there's no... My goal is to remind you of this fact today. There is no one that is better than you to raise your kids. There is no one better than you to raise your kids. And that may be despite what happened to you this morning or your thoughts on your way to mom today. I want to put your 2018 mothering into perspective and to encourage you to keep on keeping... Do I have to do this more? to keep on keeping on with confidence that you are not only a good person, but that you're a good mom. But before I do that, I want to look at the flip side. So yeah, there's this happy mom in her Lanza gown, giving her son a bath, loving him to death, doing all the right things other than whacking his head, and being a good wife, doing this, you know, thoughtful thing for her husband. Advanced 19 years, Elizabeth is a junior in high school, and it's Easter Day, literally, and we are loading up the car on Easter morning to do her first college tour trip. And we're going to be heading down through D.C., through Virginia, through down to North Carolina to look at a bunch of schools. And Elizabeth's in the back seat of the car, and we're literally in our driveway. And I still remember, you know, when you mess up, you remember it forever. I turn around and look at her and say, Elizabeth, this is the beginning, you know, trying to be, you know, really, this is the beginning of you leaving our house forever. And who was that person that said that? Oh, my word. The panic in that little girl's eyes. I will still remember that. Like, this is the only home I've ever known. This is where I spent 365 times 16 minus Brookwood. What are you saying to me? And as soon as I didn't even apologize, I just was mortified, absolutely mortified that I had said the most ridiculous, stupid thing possible. And so you can juxtapose that cute mom with her little baby and that idiot mom, you know, 19 years later, saying the worst thing I could have said to my daughter, who's really, that's anxious times for those kids. You know, what's it going to be like? What am I going to do? Am I going to fit in? Am I going to be able to do the academics? You know, how am I going to feel not knowing anybody? And I'm saying, honey, you're out of here. Some would say it's a Freudian slip. I don't think so. We can be less than ideal moms. We can be. And if we look around here, there is no such thing as the perfect mom. I mean, I love this, the myth of the perfect mom. I wish I had brought a slide. You'll find out that a whole bunch of books that I found, the one that I always loved the most was I Never Meant to Be a Witch. And my 91-year-old mom always says, I wish I hadn't yelled at you kids so much. And I, you know, makes me feel so bad because of all the good things that she did. But that's the thing she's saying still at 91 years old. Other than that, she's doing great. So there's no such thing as the ideal mom. Think about society's view on mothering. It is fraught with mixed messages. It's the best job you'll ever have. Well, that's true. Some argue, should you use the word job or not? I think that there's some truth to that. You know, we were just talking about being a taxi mom. You know, you're just driving the kids all over the place. That's a job. Laundry is a job. I mean, yes, hopefully they're labors of love some days, not all days. So laundry, all the stuff that goes into raising a kid. You were prepared for this. I hated that statement. You were prepared for this. My mother-in-law used to say to me, you know, my washing machine came with an instruction manual, my dishwasher came with an instruction manual. Where was the instruction manual? I mean, this is the closest you get here, mom to mom. I mean, this, and we're going to get into all the books and articles and things on the internet. Being an at-home mom is really devalued in the culture. Being a working mom is really misrepresented in culture, I think. Being a working mom, you know, they're always saying, how do you balance it? And if you get true interviews, I know Deb Dunsire, who goes to our church, I remember her being interviewed, and she said, I don't. It's never a perfect balancing act. And she's a CEO of companies. She's a brilliant lady. But in any case, it is always a tug and pull. And you never get, oh, I've got this figured out. Well, I do this. I have a nanny. You never figure it out whether you're an at-home mom. How many of you are at-home moms? Okay, well, that's because you can be. And how many of you work? Maureen, I know you work. One, two. Yeah. So, and we're all at-home moms. I mean, we're at home. And then we work to varying levels outside of the home, too, many of us. And that's a different kind of challenge. But being an at-home mom has its own major league challenges, too. So, there's a lot, you know, you should be able to coach. You should be able to do parent-teacher things. You know, all that. After a while, it's like, uncle. You know, this is not what I thought my life was going to be about. The other contributing factor, so there's these subliminal or less than subliminal messages that are out there, is what I call the science of parenting, and it's about 60 or 70 years old. And if you go to books and magazines and the internet, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And it really began with Dr. Spock, and it is just just bloomed unbelievably. So in the early 2000s, when I first wrote this talk, I went to Barnes & Noble. And let me share with you what I found. Magazines, Parenting Magazine, Cookie Magazine, Simple Parenting Magazine. I mean, if there's an oxymoron, there it is. Big print in magazines, How to Feed Your Child, like you didn't know. Sneak In Whole Wheat, back when my kids were little, that dog don't hunt, you know. How to Get Your Child to Like What They Don't Like. Man, that person had... Yes. How to Teach Your Child What to Do With and For Your Child. You know, and it's in a page. You know. And then they had the Best Of sections. Best Advice to Give Your Kids. Best Schedule for Your Baby. Well, I know what the best schedule was. Getting them to the best schedule was the real problem. Best Party Ideas, you know. And then I went to the book section of parenting. There were two areas, and I'm going to describe to you one of them because I think this is amazing. There were six rows of books, big rows, times 5 to 6 stacks in each of those six rows. So I did the math. About 180 shelves of books, and I don't know what it's like today. I don't know if it's better or worse because of the internet. Each shelf was 3.5 to 4 feet of books, 25 books each, 180 shelves, 4,500 books in the first section with all the how-tos. How-to, how-to. I have, between mom to mom, I didn't read a ton of books when my kids were very young, but because of mom to mom, I ended up, matter of fact, I was downstairs pulling out the book of mom to mom books out of the, you know, it's a box this big, and of course John's not home, and I'm trying to pull it off the shelf to find my Myth of the Perfect Mother. So I had a ton of them at the end, but the one that I really know, and for both kids this was true, when they were 6, I was really lost. Something happened to both of them that I just didn't know what to do. And I had your book, Your 6-Year-Old. And that book really helped me. And I know that they had Your 1-Year-Old, Your 2-Year-Old, Your 3-Year-Old. This was a series by an author. And I found that author very helpful, so that was good. So I'm not saying there's not good things in all of that. And if you have a specific issue, you can get ideas from it, and I think that that's great. But all these things that are aimed at making you the best parent you can be, so if you don't read it, are you not the best parent you can be? There were sections on pregnancy and childbirth. Somebody should have said how not to get pregnant in both the childbirth. Then two full shelves on how to name your child. I know. Quickly moved on to feeding your kids. Again, my favorite, top 200 purees for babies. I wonder how they got to the top 200. And then here's real issues that we have dealt with. I think that we could go through here, and everyone's dealt with some of these. Your struggling child, your defiant child, your late talker, your angry talker, highly sensitive kids, highly quiet kids, raising resilient kids, optimistic child, raising strong daughters, raising stressed out boys. One of them was, is your child depressed? Well, yeah, look at all the stuff that they can have going on. You know, are you depressed? Yeah! Again, there's nothing wrong with these books, but the message is we don't know how to parent, and we need these books and activities, and articles, I mean, from experts to really get us to where we need to go. So between this ideal mother that's played in a lot of characters on TV or just in conversations that you have when you go out, and then the science of parenting, there's just something in our society that permeates, and we think we have to live up to all of that. In the meantime, we're raising real kids in our real home, trying to in our real lives, and something doesn't, you know, two ships passing in the night. So I want you to think back again before you had kids, when you thought about having kids. Are these the things that you thought about? I didn't. I mean, I wasn't one of these, oh, it's all going to be, you know, going through a field of flowers. But on the other hand, I didn't expect the level of just the day-to-day complications of living with another human being and try to guide that human being to, you know, what hopefully is a good adulthood. And so it's hard to be totally content and fulfilled at every moment of this walk that we're going through. I keep going off script, so then I have trouble figuring out where I am. Equally damaging can be that we judge ourselves based on our kids' successes and failures. And that can be, you know, when you have a child that gets really good grades, then you're safe. Really, not only passed on good genes, but a good kid. And if they don't get good grades, does that mean we're all stupid? And that, no, it's not. But that's how it is. And I don't know if I said this before. I know I've said it here today. When the kids are saying, kids are doing good, and John says you're really doing a great job, and I always stop him there. No. Because tomorrow, when they're not doing so well, am I doing a bad job? This isn't about me. It was always, but that's how it can be interpreted. So I want to move on to the importance of extending our role and identity beyond just simply being a mother. And how do we do this? And I think it's about a balancing act. I love this. In another book, Jane Sisweta, I think is how she says it, everyone wants a piece of mom. Little ones need help, school-age kids need directions, teenage need encouragement but don't want to receive it, and everyone needs to know where their shoes ended up. That is such a good juxtaposition of all the heavy-duty stuff, and then I don't know where you put your shoes, or you say, you know what, they're in the hallway, yours out there, because we do have this radar that we know a lot of this stuff too. The demands on motherhood can make a mom forget who she is besides a mom, who she is as a whole person. And it's important to view us for everything that we are. We are a woman, we're a child of God, we're a wife, we're a friend, we're a sister, we're a daughter, we might be a church worker, we are an employee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And recognize the need to balance all of these different facets of our life within each season of our lives. So what that season looks like today, for me, who overslept this morning and doesn't even have any kids, I probably couldn't have overslept if I had kids, but my stage of life is very different than the stage of life that I can remember at all these different stages of my seasons of my life. And so I'm going to talk about five areas that the big takeaway I want you to have today is not negative, but it's how do I, when I'm out of, this is the thing I want you to go out of here with, when I'm out of balance, when I'm feeling lousy about myself, lousy about my parenting, I don't feel like I have control of anything, when I'm just not doing well, I want you to be able to think about, am I balancing my life? Am I putting way too much into my kids, way too much into, and by that, there's no such thing as a 20%, 20%, 20%. But overall, do I have some semblance of balancing my life? Because when we're in better balance, we will do, we will be more of that whole person that God intended us to be. Okay? Again, don't think you have to give 20, 20, 20, 20, 20. So the first one, surprise, surprise, is time for kids. We can't ignore our little ones or even our teenagers. And I'm not unrealistic about the fact that the young ones, especially those babies and toddlers, take up way more than 20% of our time. That's just how it is. And that's okay, because that's the season of life that you're at. But I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on spending time with kids, because it's the end of the mom-to-mom season, and I bet you've gotten lots of good ideas on just how you go about the time that you spend with kids and attitudes and things like that. However, we do need to be especially aware that if all of our time and energy goes into our young children at the tremendous expense of the other four, that is a significant imbalance that won't be good for them, and it certainly is not good for us. And so we need to find outlets to carve out time for the other four areas that I'm talking about. Time for husband. And I'm not going to speak, I don't know if we have any single moms here, but I can't speak to that. I don't have experience in that. And I recognize that that's a different thing. But then you're looking at 25, you have less to divide. That's the good news. The bad news is that you have obviously more that needs to be done. And so I don't want to ignore that, but I'm not going to really address it today, and I apologize for that. So I remember when our kids were very young, when I was feeling the most blue, the most out of sorts, the most irritable with the kids, and as Elizabeth got a little bit older, she was always in cue. She has this great emotional capacity, and she'd say, "Mom, are you tired?" In other words, "You are being such a crap." and I'd say, "Yeah, you know I am." She said, "You should take a nap." She was like 3 years old, 4 years old. It's like whack, you know. But a lot of times I would realize John and I had not had any individual time. Well, Marie, you know, yeah, I mean, this had any individual time for too long a period of time, and it would get acute, and I would know it right away. And so we would make sure that we remedied that by going out to our favorite haunt, Bullfinch's, just down the road here. Funny, I moved a mile away from there. It wasn't really on purpose. I think that was Freudian. I cannot tell you how many tears I have shared in that with that restaurant. I'm sure everyone said, "Oh, here she comes again." But it was my opportunity to just let go. And I wasn't in my own house. And poor John, he said, "Do we have to go to Bullfinch's again?" And I just hadn't really conveyed with him in a more relaxed setting. And I would always feel better after that. It was such a remedy. But it was just that I wasn't having my time with John. We would sit on the front stoop when David was... I remember this. When David was 2 years old, we're sitting on the front stoop of the house one day. And this is 2 years later. And I turned to John and I said, "I really miss you." And he looked at me. He hadn't been traveling much at that time. And he said, and it was really the culmination of realizing that so much of our time had changed. We didn't have that. And so it's good to recognize that never is going to be the same again. And that's okay. But hold on to it because it comes back. And it seems impossible for those with very, very young ones, but it does come back. And so it's important to allow that connection time. Invest in your marriage. And I can say that coming from the other side of raising two kids, and I know some of you have more than that. Don't expect things to be the same as before kids. Everything has changed, and that's not necessarily bad. I mean, kids can really flourish a marriage in many respects. Nurturing the marriage is good for you and for your kids. Communication is key. You're not going to always agree on discipline, but you need to be able to talk about it and come to terms on when you give and take. Keep a sense of humor. Always I feel that terribly. Seek counseling if needed, and don't neglect intimacy. You want that marriage to flourish over time. And all of these things are really part and parcel. It's not going to look the same as your wedding night always, sometimes, but that's so important. So you have time for kids, time for husband, time for friends. I love this in Ecclesiastes. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, her friend can help her up. But pity the woman who falls and has no one to help her up. And I love that. Fellow sojourners make all the difference in the world. You have a bunch of them right here, and I know that there have been friendships that have grown out of mom to mom. We are at our best when we are supported by our good friends. How many of you know Debbie Wilson across the street? And if you've heard me speak before, you know. No, that's right. She's, yeah. Closer to God. Yeah. She is a godly woman. Debbie and I met right when I was first dating John. So we have been BFFs forever. And when we both worked, we would get together as couples and stuff, but then she had her twins right around the time of David. I had David. She was still working, but then we had our youngest 9 days apart. And when we were still home on maternity leave, we would meet at each other's houses. The older kids were in preschool, and our babies were infants, and we would do Jane Fonda together in her living room or my living room. And then we would have a bit, because we had to get back into our pre-pregnancy shape, and then we would have these big breakfasts, you know. But we did that every week that we could, and it was really fun. And then we both stopped working after a while, and we belonged to Bible Study Fellowship down the road, and I can't remember if that might have been on Thursdays, and there was a preschool program, and so then we would grab the kids and we would go out to lunch every day, and we still try. Now that we don't have kids, you think once a week would be easy, but it's not, because of these things called jobs. But we still about once a month get together, and when we do, it is glorious. I really mean that, because she can just pick up in my life. I can just pick up in her, where she is in her life, and we just continue. And we have the best, you know, that saying, I'll never give you up as a friend because you know too much. Holy cow. We have journals on each other right here, you know. But that has been a linchpin in my life and in her life, and we both just know that. And it is, we see each other. We're like sisters that get along. Some of you have family nearby, and that's a wonderful thing. And family is integral with who you are. Friends can be our extended family, too. In our Bible study, it just so happens that many of them don't have family anywhere nearby. They're from South Africa or Switzerland or wherever. And we all agree that this was a key to living a balanced life, having close Christian friends, because they walk beside us in much the same way that I'm talking about with Debbie. And it's a couple's thing, and that's a wonderful thing. For me, a true friend is honest. Proverbs 27:6 says, wounds from a friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. You have to think about that one a minute. Because a true friend loves at all times. Their criticism will act to build you up. So they may be saying something that you don't necessarily want to hear, but they're doing it out of love. And that kind of criticism, you can take to heart in a good way. And one final thought on friendship comes from Proverbs 12:26. A righteous woman is cautious in her friendships. Pick your friends wisely. Pick who you tell your deepest, darkest things to wisely. Because, oh my gosh, the pain that can come from that not happening is very difficult. That kind of friend will be a treasured possession for you over the years of your mothering and beyond. Okay, this one is a short one, but it's so important. Time for self. A walk, a manicure, to be able to curl up with a book or take a nap. I mean, do those sound like treasures that you'll never get to again? Being a mom, this is Jane Siswerder again, being a mom can quickly eclipse all of the great things you are as a person. Without attention to your other parts and pieces, the task of sorting out who you are other than mother can become more and more difficult. If we don't make an effort to give ourselves what we need, no one else will. We'll have no one to blame but ourselves. And so when my little one says, Mom, are you tired? It's her being my conscience is saying, Joanne, you need a break. Something's going too far if it's happening on a regular basis. And so whether it's if you have young ones, if it's switching with your friend to, you know, every other week to babysit for one while you go do whatever it is that you like to do, even to meet your husband for lunch, to go shopping, to, again, do the manicure, read the book, and all those things. Give yourself some time to just be you, to go for those long walks around Walden Pond or whatever. And then this one I'm going to spend a little time with, time for God. I briefly will address three issues. God's role in our struggles. And some of us, I'll even take it a step further, some of us struggle with, is God really a part of our lives? And I don't want to minimize that, because that's a very real journey that people go on. Or maybe they say, God is not important to me. So I'm just going to share these things. I'm not trying to be holier than thou by any stretch of the imagination, because I'm not. But first, let's talk about our struggles, and then we're going to talk about the issue of faith and the issue of finding time to invest in faith if that's something that you really want to be doing. How many of you struggle with motherhood? Have we talked about that? Okay, Joanne. For me, it was an on-again, off-again thing. But I just was thinking about the story of Joshua in the Bible. So Moses had... God had used Moses to take all the Israelites out of Egypt. He freed them from slavery. He parted the Red Seas. He guided them through the desert for 40 years. And I won't get into why they kept going in that circle. Moses died right on the edge. When Moses died, they were right on the edge of going into the Promised Land. Moses was way into his hundreds. I forget, 140, 100. He was way up in his hundreds. And Joshua, God had chosen Joshua to succeed Moses. And to fill Moses' shoes, I would be a little nervous to fill Moses' shoes. Not that Moses was perfect, but he did some pretty amazing things with God at his helm. And so God speaks to Joshua, knowing how Joshua is feeling, and he says, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you or forsake you. And these messages are in the Bible because God has something to say to us, and that's why it's there. So for most of us, our families are not 2 million strong. We don't have to lead all those Israelites across the Jordan into the Promised Land. But sometimes it feels like it. Because we're raising human beings, again, from infancy. It's a formidable task. Just like Joshua knew there would be obstacles, but he couldn't see them, I'm sure he knew they were there, and we can see the obstacles that are coming. If we have elementary schoolers, what's teenagehood going to be like? If we have teenagers that are going to be going off to college, what's that like? If we have infants, am I going to be able to make it through toddlerhood? We see the obstacles that are before us, and sometimes we can say, oh, I can do that, and other times we're saying, holy cow, what am I going to do? It's not a coincidence that caused God to say these words of promise and encouragement right off the bat. So that was in verse 5, and then here's verses 6 and 7. In Joshua alone, there are 5 different verses that include these words in 6 and 7. Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged. I will never leave you or forsake you. So it's written about 5 different times in that early stage of Joshua. And you know, 98 times in the Bible it says, do not be afraid, do not be discouraged. And we can take to heart this promise, this message, I will never leave you or forsake you, do not be afraid, do not fear. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a cakewalk. But it does mean that God will be with us. And so through our struggles, it's good to remember that and to try to understand how that can bring some balance in our lives. If you wonder about your faith, faith is a funny thing because it's not easily defined. And for some people, it's because they saw a real miracle. Certainly that was true in Bible times. I think it's even true today. But Thomas said, if I can't put... you know, my fingers in his wounds, I won't believe that he really showed up to you guys after the resurrection. And then Jesus shows up before the apostles again, and Thomas sees him, and he says, my Lord and my God. Jesus said to him, because you have seen and believed, and later on it says, blessed are those who haven't seen but believe. And then there's the guy that came to Jesus asking for help. I can't remember if it was for his son and Jesus said, well, do you believe? And he said, Lord, help me in my unbelief. And I love that. because God recognizes that we're going to doubt. Lord, help me in my unbelief. Whether it's, I've prayed that many times when I've had family members that are sick, or we're going through a trauma that just doesn't seem to have an end to it. And, you know, God's with us, so okay. But in the meantime, we're going through this very painful, you know, cancer situation or whatever. Lord, help me in my unbelief that you will be with us through it all. So I recommend that you ask God for the same thing if you struggle with faith and you want to believe but can't necessarily believe. Lord, help me in my unbelief. And then the last one is that old thing called time again. And that's why God is in the fifth of the balancing act. If God's message to us that he is great enough and worthy enough to handle our future, then faith in him is something that we would want to nurture. And that requires spending time with God. Well, stand in line, God. I've got all these to-do lists today, you know. And so God understands the seasons of our lives. So whether we pray with him in the shower, when we're carpooling, maybe we, or times when we just shut off our telephone for 10 minutes so we can have our mindset on something else without disruption. Doing dishes, folding laundry, all those things that we love doing. While you're breastfeeding your child, there are lots of places that you can pray without, you know, going in a prayer closet somewhere. From my experience, I can say with a surety that we will all struggle, we will all be discouraged, we will wrestle with faith, and certainly we will have periods of a minute or two of free time seems like an impossibility. However, I recommend that you keep threads of spending time with God as a facet of all stages and seasons of your life. As the kids got older, I can remember, sometimes I wish I would do this now, I would get up a half an hour before them and go downstairs and have prayer time before they got out of bed. It sounds like, to me, it sounds like a miracle woman that did that, but it wasn't. But it was just something that really fit in the stage of my life. And now there are other things that fit in the stage of my life. So I just want to close on the balancing act. All five areas are important for our well-being. They aren't all equal. And where before kids we could really give our husband more than 20%, after kids it's a lot less than that, but we need to keep that going. What's important is that at any point in our lives is to recognize that when we're feeling way out of sorts, and I don't mean at the minute, but I mean you see a trend going on, to think about the five areas and how well you're balancing them. And likelihood is that something is either totally missing, and maybe more thing is totally missing, or hardly being addressed. And so that's the piece of it that's most important, because there is a little bit of a control factor there that you can make some changes to. The science of parenting, the society ideal myth, that's can be useful to you, the science of parenting. It is not the answer that will make you the ideal mother that society can talk about. Throw that baby out with the bathwater. Just, it's gone. It doesn't exist. It's just a fallacy of society. Just like that perfect Barbie figure, you know, we've now learned that most of that stuff is airbrushed. We know that, and we need to remember that. That what we see isn't necessarily what really is, and it's who, not necessarily who we are. And I would give up a lot of these lifestyles to not look like that perfect person. But we get that confused. So I will end where I began. I look out and I see each of you as a beautiful, treasured possession of God. You are his children, and he loves you even more than you love your children. And so I'm going to ask you to just listen to these words that we used to sing a couple of praise songs before we started Mom to Mom. And the song that we sang the first time I gave this talk was this song, Holy Hands, and I won't sing it. But listen to the words. These are holy hands. He's given us holy hands. He works through these hands, and so these hands are holy. And it's such a nice, soft song. And it is, what makes something holy is that they're set apart. God is holy. He's set apart from anyone or anything else. And so I encourage you to set apart from the way the world thinks and considers the beautiful way that God created you. One of the many reasons He created you was to be the mother of those kids that you have in your home. And what do those holy hands do? Well, yeah, they love their children and they hug them, but they do laundry and dishes and empty the garbage, and men cut fingers and drive a car. They can be hands that deliver something to help someone that needs to heal a broken heart. So these holy hands are not necessarily pristine hands, but they're holy hands. And so I want you to all stand up. Kumbaya. And if you need to hold the back of your chair, if you can't stand still and close your eyes, hold the back of your chair. You know what? But you can't hold the back of your chair. Just lean on it, because you're going to put out your holy hands. Close your eyes. I don't want to see any open eyes. And I want you to repeat after me. I and your name. You're looking. Am beautiful. I am a capable and fantastic person. God loves me for who I am. His. I have unique gifts as a mom. I vow not to let society or others convince me otherwise. Thank you, God, for blessing me with children. Thank you, God, for making me their mom. For giving me these holy hands. Bless me as I use them for all my mothering tasks. Remind me of your presence today. Thank you that you promise to never leave or forsake me. I pray this in Jesus' name. I lift up my voice. Amen. Okay, may God bless you in all facets of your life as a woman. Amen. Okay. And I even left you time for your group. Ah!
Everyone's on your table to have the questions. We have
and next week is brunch.
Oh yeah, thank you.
There's a sign on the seat over on the table. Okay. Or just kind of coordinating the groups that you're going to never have one enough too much and not enough at all.
Because people hear it and they think, oh, it's electric.